Any views, thoughts, or opinions expressed on the Rejuvenating Health podcast are solely that of the speakers and are intended as such. Please contact your trusted medical practitioner for medical advice. Let's go, girls. Hey, ladies, welcome back to the Rejuvenating Health podcast. I'm Shauna, and I'm here with women's health nurse practitioner, Lindsay Van Schoik. And today on the show, we have a special guest. We have Nathan Riley. So we're super pumped to have you on the show today, Nathan. Why don't you start off by just telling us a little bit about yourself and what you do and kind of what led you to here on the podcast?
Yeah, thanks for having me. Well, you know, first and foremost, I'm just a guy who, what's that line from SNL? Like, I'm just like you. Every day I wake up and put my pants on. Only after I put my pants on, I make gold records, something like that. But frankly, yeah, I do all the normal human activities and, I'm a dad. Like, I feel like that's actually the most important part of my story is I'm a dad and I'm married to my high school sweetheart, who's a woman. And I deeply care about things that I don't have the answers to. Like, that to me was a really great path, you know, in all of the possible things I could have gone into in my life. Studying women's health has been the greatest mystery because I never... I've never had a period. I've never been pregnant. And unfortunately, I'll never be able to have a baby. And that makes it very hard for me to say I'm an expert in anything that I train to do because I don't have any direct experience with it. So, so yeah, I'm an OBGYN who does home birth. That's probably the weirdest thing about me.
I think that that's awesome.
I love that introduction because I work with a lot of male OBGYNs. And the fact that you know that you don't understand what happens inside of a woman's body and what we go through, that's like the best news that you could tell a woman as a patient, I think. Because I think it makes you more compassionate. You're like, I don't know what you're going through, but you know. So I love that.
Well, you know, another sort of corollary to that is, you know, I know you guys we're not talking necessarily about birth here, but for many women that are seeing you, I think they're probably hoping that they can have a baby someday. Yeah. And when you fall into this trap of there's a protocolized way to do this, we lose reverence for this whole experience. Not only having sex and connecting with a person in that intimate way, but then what happens when you're now pregnant and we're like parting the lips and pushing our hand inside and doing all this stuff that isn't like, it's not supposed to be sexual, but maybe we should still maintain a reverence for the privileged position that we're in here. And we're touching a person in a spot that's usually sexual.
Yeah.
So you can't turn it into some sort of mechanized thing, whether it's a pap smear or whatever else. Like, there needs to be a little bit of compassion here. So I'm very, very thoughtful around how to show up in the most masculine way in order to use that masculine energy to support people as opposed to conquering them. And that has really served me well, I suppose.
So how did you get on that path? Because we talk a lot, like we've had a lot of experts on in women's health in the medical field. And most of the experts we have on don't go the traditional medicine route, which we don't really either. Yeah. So how did you end up on the path and doing home births and where you're at now? Because that's not taught in residency and med school, none of that. Yeah.
Well, you used the word traditional, and I'm gonna encourage you to reconsider that, because traditionally this is not how things were done. Conventionally, that's how they become.
Okay, you're right. Yep.
But they don't do squat. They don't help people. So why am I doing things that are actually, if not helping, sometimes even harming? And frankly, you know, from a hormone standpoint alone, we talk about birth control. Like, you become a master of birth control and we tell you we're giving you hormones. That's not hormones. They're not even hormones. Mm-mm. Like, I'm giving you synthetic endocrine disruptors and I'm telling you they're hormones. Like, so when you ask, like, if you're curious about when I started questioning this, it was like day one of learning shit about fuck, to take from Ozarks. Like, you're telling me this is what we're doing? And I was like, okay, well, seems a little suspicious. And then you're so far in, it feels like you've been waiting for the bus for so long. And you see all these compassionate doctors and nurses doing this work, and it just is falling flat for you because it's not helping people. Mm-hmm. And they're coming back and saying, that didn't go well, or that didn't feel good, or I feel nuts now that I'm on this. And I was sort of trained to say, the data doesn't support that. Nonsense. Mm-hmm. keep doing it this yeah. way. So it's frankly, I was compelled because it wasn't working. And I didn't put $500K into my education to not be able to serve people. So it was a compulsion to be able to continue to help women, but realizing that my bag of tricks was far inferior maybe to some more traditional methods like fertility awareness and like maybe some directed supplementation or heaven forbid a whole foods diet with some regular exercise and good sleep. Like,
wow. You know?
Yeah, I love
what
that.
A cowboy. So
how home birth? Because you don't, you know, that's really neat. Yeah, so how did you get into that?
Well, instead of telling the long version of this story, I'll just say that, like everything I had said before, I was finding that all of these things I was being told that we must do to, quote, help the mom or help the baby, that it was actually more of a nuisance to everybody, including me, including the client, the woman giving birth, her partner, maybe her family members, the nurse. Everybody was sort of like, we have to do that, except for somebody in some cloud somewhere that was saying, this is how you have to do it. There mm-hmm. was like this phantom somewhere that was going to be so upset if we didn't do it this way. But nobody could really explain why we were doing it, right? It was just this mind control kind of thing. So I just stopped doing cervical exams. And I found that these laboring women were giving birth without me needing to put my hand inside places that doesn't belong. And frankly, my C-section rates started plummeting so much so that I had to start sneaking into other C-sections to make sure I was still doing enough C-sections. Like, wow. Not because the hospital needed it for money, but that was part of your training. You have to do like a lot of C-sections to get through. Mm-hmm. So I would just scrub into other C-sections and just be a part of it and help the juniors. And I was just doing less. I was doing less of that. So as I started realizing the less I do, the better outcomes I get, I started, you know, then kind of going back into traditional midwifery practices and realizing that there was a way to have babies way before we had forceps and vacuums and scalpels and all of that. And yeah, sometimes, you know, babies died a lot before, mm-hmm. let's say 1900, but we didn't really do that much great, you know, that much good benefit by completely mechanizing this whole process either. And so we saw there's this tension, right? And as soon as Rockefeller medicine was adopted, there was a way to do it. And then we just continued to protocolize. Meanwhile, the person that is supposed to be there for our care is like nowhere to be found. We're not asking questions. We're not listening. We don't have time or incentives to listen to them. And I feel for the other OBGYNs, but again, that's not what I signed up for.
Yeah.
So I was being scolded for sitting and getting to know people and like understanding what their biggest fears were. Why did they want to have a VBAC? Like, what? Tell me about your previous birth. It's like pretty much all you need to do in order to get a person to really, really open up around what their birth experience looked like in the past and what they're hoping for. And until I know what you're hoping for, I can't really align these things around you because I don't know what you're going for. If I was giving birth, this is what I would do, but that's not the case. Mm-hmm. So I met a guy named Stu Fishbein, who's pretty famous in the birth world. He's recently, you know, he's probably like semi-retired now, but he took me to a couple home births and that was it. Like I went home feeling like inspired again about the work. And then I just kept going down that path. Finally, I did one last C-section when I was on call here in Kentucky. And I'm actually in Albany. I just had a home birth this morning in Albany, interestingly. I traveled up here, but I live in Kentucky and I was in the hospital there doing palliative care inpatient. And I was doing hospitalist work for, you know, as an OBGYN, meaning I managed all the emergencies. Mm-hmm. And it was like one last straw was like another C-section I had to do. And the surgeon that was operating with me wanted to chat about a whole bunch of things that weren't relevant to this person giving birth. And I was like, I can't be on call. I can't be doing this anymore. And I resigned. And then 2 weeks later, we had our first baby. And then COVID happened like immediately after that. So I'm not going to work in the hospital system in that regard, like swabbing people and taking their babies into the NICU because the mom tested positive. Like, I'm not going to play a part of that. I didn't want to be on call. And I said, forget it. No more birth. I'm done with birth. But I couldn't stay away. And I realized that midwives really needed OBGYNs to support them. Mm-hmm. So I started supporting community-based midwives. And then I was realizing that a lot of women still can't find midwives because they're too high risk. They had C-sections or they had something bad happen before. And I was like, I know how to manage those things. I'll take you on. And then I just started going to births and here we are. So
wow, that's
really neat.
So you live in Kentucky.
Yeah. So do you travel?
Yeah, I was going to ask the same question. Go for it.
Go ahead. You can go. Okay. So you live in Kentucky, but you travel. So how does that work? Do you only travel a certain amount of miles or how do you do that?
Yeah. My first one was about a 4.5 hour drive. And I was like, it's too far. Can't be doing that because then you have to like move up there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then very, very rich people started reaching out and wanting to have a doctor at their birth. And I started charging big ticket prices. Although actually it wasn't until the second half of 2023 that I started charging a little bit more money. Because if I travel, then I can't take births anywhere in my neighborhood, let alone an hour drive away. So if anybody's listening and they're like, oh, I want him to come to my birth, it's $20,000. You have to pay for all of my travel, my rental car, accommodations. You have to pay for everything. In fact, I might even ask you to bring my family out, which should be a high enough bar that I'm not going to be compelled to travel because I really don't want to be away from my little girls. I want to be with them and help them grow up and not be hanging out for 3 weeks waiting on a baby because we never know when the baby's going to come. Right. And just because I'm there doesn't guarantee that you're going to have a home birth, right? Like you're not entitled to have a living baby, let alone a home birth.
Mm-hmm.
That's sticky. That's sticky for people listening, I'm sure.
Well, especially if paying you that money because they're high risk, right? And then you're not guaranteeing that they can have that type of birth that they want at home.
There's no guarantee. Yeah.
Yeah. Typically, how far in advance would you go? Would you travel? I know you said be without them for 3 weeks. So obviously, you have to go up a little beforehand because you just don't know.
Mm-hmm. I usually aim for like 38 to 39 weeks, and then I stay right around 41 to 42 weeks.
Okay.
Your guess date, your due date is 40 weeks, sort of.
Yeah.
It's kind of a guess.
So love the lifestyle aspects, and our listeners probably love hearing us talk about it. So we do have a lot of listeners that have trouble with fertility and how are you helping women with that and talking to them about that? Because I get a lot of resistance sometimes with my women that I try to talk about in the hospital that I work with. When you start talking to them about their nutrition and their exercise and their sleep and their lifestyle changes, you get a lot of eye rolling or even like being told that you're fat shaming for talking to them about these lifestyle changes instead of just giving them Clomid or something like a quick fix to help them get pregnant. But I think it's really important that people hear that like your period is a vital sign. And if you're not having regular periods, there's a lot of times something going on underneath that's preventing your body from having a baby and it's protecting that baby and your body from that. And so how are you talking with women about that and managing their care with that? And is that something that you're helping women do or are you just focusing on births?
Yeah, I had a very comprehensive fertility program for a while and it works, but it requires so much time and patience, both on my part and on the part of my clients, that I just had to fold it because I was doing the births and I was doing I collaborate with midwives around the country. I mean, there's just so many things. So that one had to be chopped off. But frankly, I think that the conversation starts around the vital sign thing you mentioned, Lindsay. You know, if you're having 12 to 13 regular predictable bleeds per year, you're probably pretty healthy. Mm-hmm. Probably. Doesn't mean you're guaranteed to get pregnant, but if that's not happening, then getting pregnant naturally is going to be really hard. So we have to investigate that. But let me also start, before we go into the women's side of this, even though your females, your audience is female, let me start by saying that I realize it's silly for a man to say it's a privilege to have a period. I get it. I hear it. So let's not talk about women. Let's talk about the men, because I bet men are upwards of 75% of the time actually the ones responsible. And I'll explain why. So instead of picking on the menstrual period or embracing the menstrual period, because I will never have one and I can't relate. How about if you're not pumping out 100 million sperm per cc of ejaculate, you're not healthy. And that's exactly what we're faced with in our country. So women are carrying the burden of fertility challenges. You know, the man goes and gets a semen test done. They look at it under a microscope and they say one thing. You've got greater than, what are they saying now? 20 million sperm. Sometimes that's all the report says, greater than 20 million. And the guy's like, back to the gym or back to the whatever. Well, guy, like 50 years ago, if you had the bare minimum to successfully do IVF, that's what that 20 million mark is. If you had the bare minimum, 50 years ago, we would have considered you like sterile. So what is going on in our environment that is altering women's menstrual cycles, which is a part of their inextricable link with nature, with Mother Earth? I heard it called Lover Earth recently, and I'm going to steal that. So with Lover Earth, and what's happening with male, like the sperm count? It's not just count, but the motility, the sort of intact wholeness of their genetic material. So if you look at a semen analysis, it's going to show these markers, but it doesn't show anything about oxidative stress, which is where we can start working on men. My guess is that if most men out there took their cell phones out of their pockets and at least put them on airplane mode, they got 9 hours of sleep per night, aimed for that every night. They were eating oysters, a can of Crown Prince oysters 3 times per week. And they probably stopped doing the long sauna sessions every day, that their sperm count would triple, quadruple, maybe whatever the 10 time upple is. That's how dramatic of a difference it can be. Mm-hmm. And that is free advice. Go and have babies now. If we needed to do more, we could start doing some supplementing.
I was going to say what you were saying. I was saying it was my husband's fault. In my case, 8 years after my oldest, it was my husband's fault. I'm just kidding. No babies here.
Yeah, let's just let the men carry a little bit of the burden for once. And like, frankly, for those women out there listening, like, I know you want to be protective, and I know you probably have things you need to do better. Like, there's no excuse bypassing that. But even when my wife and I were trying to get pregnant, I had no idea about fertility awareness tracking. I had no idea. I had finished my residency. I was in fellowship at UC San Diego. I had no idea that there was changes to the cervical mucus. No idea. Mm-hmm. I knew about basal body temperature, and I knew about luteinizing hormone, the little P strips. But frankly, if you're waiting until that LH strip turns and then you're having sex, you're too late. You need to get the sperm in there, and then it needs to be copious amounts of it. So let me emphasize one more thing, which is there's this notion that it's one egg, one sperm, and that's complete bullshit. It is not one egg, one sperm. Ultimately, yes, when a singleton baby is born, it was probably one egg that merged with one sperm, but the fertilization process requires tens, if not hundreds of thousands of healthy sperm. And they have to travel the distance equivalent to us walking from LA to San Francisco based on their body size. So those little sperm have to take whatever you've given them nutritionally. They have to have adequate pH in the vagina, adequate fluid, you know, cervical fluid in the cervical canal. There needs to be a nice bed of endometrium laying there with, you know, that's all prepped for the embryo. The sperm need to swim all the way up through the fallopian tube and meet an egg there sitting in the darkness. And hundreds of thousands of them need to get to try to make that voyage. They need to make it most of the way there. And when you've got 100,000 sperm, you can see this directly on in vitro fertilization, like when they videotape it. The human egg cell, the ovum, is visible on your finger. It's visible with the naked eye. That's how big it is. It's this big ball of fluid. And the sperm rush it on every side and bump into it. Tens of thousands, not one. Not one like with like the right moves gets in there and is the strongest swimmer. It's bullshit. It's very Darwinian. It doesn't work like that. Otherwise, they would select the strongest one and introduce them like rhinos in the wild and let them merge. It doesn't happen. You need this cooperative effort, which is why if you have the bare minimum of sperm per ejaculate, you're already fucked. Like it's going to be very, very hard. So what can we do? We have to consider that even if the sperm are strong and there's plenty of them, we need to consider that the genetic material needs to also be intact, which is where the oxidative stress that us men have on ourselves through the productivity thing, driving our adrenals into the dirt, using TRT and then using HCG to balance it out. Like we are a mess, us men. We're drinking too much. Mm-hmm. We've got these things in our pockets, centimeters from our gonads, just blasting them with radiation. We have to start sleeping and getting our nutrition dialed in. And if we don't, what happens is this oxidative stress inside within the genetic material of sperm meets the egg. The egg is beautiful. It's perfect. The woman has done everything. Thank goodness you're here. The sperm is engulfed. And then we have an incomplete blueprint and you miscarry. a miscarry. And then, you know, people like you and your listeners are wondering, what's wrong with me? Why am I broken? You're not broken. Your husband needs to get his act together and you guys need to connect and do this right. Because if you don't do it now and you go the IVF route, that's an independent risk factor for every pregnancy complication under the sun. And it's because, not because IVF is dangerous, although I think it might be, it's that we have never even looked upstream as to why you were struggling to get pregnant in the first place. And now we've compelled the body and forced the body to carry a baby when it's not healthy. Like you're not healthy enough to carry a baby. Why are we compelling you through a multi-billion dollar industry to carry a baby now?
That makes total sense, honestly. Yeah. And it's a miracle in itself when you, just how you, when you described it, I was thinking that's just beautifully said, like a children's book almost, how you were explaining it, but it explained it like it's such a miracle. All that has to go into it, I don't think that people think about on a regular basis when they're trying to get pregnant. It truly is a miracle. There's so much that goes into it.
Yeah,
and I think that explanation too makes those people that are maybe not getting pregnant. I mean, people are impatient, so they want to get pregnant the first month that they're trying to get pregnant. And so it is a process and everything has to be perfect. And so it does take time for that to happen. I know accidents happen and people get pregnant that aren't trying to get pregnant all the time, but it is this process that has to be perfect for it to happen. Yeah.
We actually went through that ourselves. My wife pulled out her IUD. I don't think she would ever have an IUD again anyways, but at the time that was the most reasonable solution for us. And for those out there listening, like, why am I opposed to the IUD? It's like you're putting either a conductive piece of metal or synthetic hormones, hormones, there's that word again, into the center of your life force energy, your womb space. It's like a sacred space. It's directly related to your second chakra, the center of your creative expression. It's where you create life. So when she had it removed, I thought, like, insert erect penis into hole and you get a baby. Like, I thought that's how it worked. That's what they taught me in health class, and it didn't happen.
The banana illustration.
Yeah. Right. Just imagine the banana, put the banana in the hole, the round banana in the round hole, and you get a baby 9 months later or 10 months later. So, you know, anyways, frankly, I was pretty discouraged and frustrated. And my wife reminded me, and this is like an important lesson for everybody. You are not entitled to have a baby. Yeah. You're not. And it's not that you didn't work hard enough or that you aren't healthy enough. It's that it is a gift to have a baby. And as I've been saying more and more now, a home birth is not an entitlement. A home birth is hard earned. And even when you work your hardest, it may not happen. And that's okay. It's not something that you're entitled to just because you have a lot of money or a lot of resources. In fact, people who don't have a lot of resources seem to be having better birth outcomes in a lot of ways, like avoiding God knows what happens in the hospital. You know, like there's so many different things. A lot of people are like, well, I'm just going to have a baby here at home and I'm going to find a midwife that can attend. And if you add up all of the hospital bills and the deductibles and the co-payments, you end up paying more for your hospital birth anyways. So I'm just going to do this thing, right? It's a very like humble sort of thing. This happened especially during COVID, and women were having great home births because they didn't want to be in the hospital. But it really demonstrated just the power of getting out of the way and letting nature take over. But that starts preconception all the way through the childbirth, you know, your childbearing years into menopause, really is getting out of the way of nature.
Well, I think we get impatient when it comes to childbirth as in the hospital setting, as the patient, whatever. But women, they're wanting to get induced and they're tired of being pregnant. And then the doctors are busy and they want to get sleep. And so we're putting Pitocin in the body and it's not a natural process then at all. And you're right, your risk of C-section and all that type of stuff is going up way, way higher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did your wife have a home birth?
Yeah, our first was in the hospital and, you know, she was 10 centimeters at home. I checked her because I could see her transitioning and starting to rock back and forth. And I was like, oh no, you wanted to be in the hospital. So let's get you there. And I remember she was in the bathtub. Yeah. And I was like, let me just do a gentle exam. And she like immediately, I didn't even go in past my first knuckle and I felt head and I was like, okay, let's get you out of the bath.
You're like staying calm.
Yeah. Let me go get the car started. And then it was like, dun, 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 trying to get everything together. And she's just like gradually walking to the car. And we showed up and then she had a baby. The second, we got pregnant way sooner than we were expecting. And after having relative challenges the first time, the second time it was accidental, which prompted a very hard conversation around sexual liberation and vasectomies and all of that later, which we don't have to get into. But
that's okay. We've been into it.
We can get into it.
John is there right now.
But anyways, the decision to have a home birth came at about 34 weeks in our second pregnancy, and our we had to find a midwife and everything. But really, the reason was it was in the middle of COVID, and my wife just was not willing to play ball with the hospital system and swabbing and all of that. So we had a home birth, and it was a 90-minute from the time that she started feeling things and her waters opened to the baby being asleep on her chest. We were doing a type of breath work, like a somatic breath work called effigy breath. And the midwives were sitting in the corner as like this loud drumming was going. And we were like, this baby just breathed out. It was amazing. So kind of a free birth, honestly, because the midwives were there, but didn't really have to do anything. So it was lovely, you know, and as a man, but especially as an OBGYN, being present for a birth in the home environment, it re-inspires you around what life is in the first place. And I think it was very healing for my wife to have a baby on our bed where we probably conceived her. It was nobody jamming on your belly, nobody like drawing blood at 5 a.m, nobody taking the baby to like give you rest. And then you worry about what are they giving them formula and all this. It was just, we're home. Let's go to sleep now. Or whatever you do after you have a baby. I don't even remember. Right. Probably not sleep right away.
No, that's nice though.
Yeah.
I think that's great that you're doing that though, because I feel like there is more of a natural movement to go back to the way things used to be with even like with birth and with ways to manage not getting pregnant. Like I have this conversation with people all the time. I'm like, you do not have to be on birth control to not get pregnant. There are all kinds of natural family planning methods. Like there's so much technology now out there even that you can use as long as you're having that vital sign of your period working, that you don't need to be on birth control. And I don't think women understand how damaging birth control can be to their bodies because no one's having that conversation with them about it. Like you should have to have like a long educated conversation with your physician about what birth control does to your body and your hormones before you're ever allowed to get put on it. But that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I would say, I mean, man, we could go so many different directions here, but like the birth control thing is a total farce. It is a really harmful, call it what it is, a medication. It's a medication.
Yeah, it is.
It's not, there's nothing natural about it. You're not ovulating. You're not, therefore you're not menstruating. You're bleeding, but because we've withdrawn progesterone. I mean, Lindsay, I know that you know this and your audience probably does, but it bears repeating. Is there nothing else out there? Well, fertility awareness tracking is a pretty darn good method if you're really dialed in. In fact, there are 3 women in my life, my wife, my sister, and a friend, who all started their bleed on the full moon, this past full moon. It was the day of, all together. And that's because they're really in sync with their bodies, the rhythms of nature. They spend as much time as they can sleeping. They try to eat nutritious foods. Like if you're there, and by the way, it doesn't have to be the full moon. It could also be the new moon. But you may find that it's a cyclical thing, like the new moon's coming or it's waxing gibbous or whatever. It's coming. You can feel it. You know it's coming. It's being pulled. You're being pulled like in a different direction. If you can pay attention and be present with yourself, guys too, you will notice these rhythms. And if we can get the distractions out of the way, understanding that you have a fertile window, that if you have sex during that fertile window, you could get pregnant. And if not, you can't get pregnant. If we would teach that to little girls instead of the whole, you know, put the round peg in the round hole trick that we learned in health class, along with ulcers on the penis and syphilitic, you know, cankers and whatnot. If it was actually like real health education, man, we would have a totally different practice, I think. Women would have so much more understanding that when we put you on this, we are detaching you from your magic. Are you okay with that? Because if you are, then we'll do it. But not just, let's get rid of that pesky bleed. In fact, I have a whole month's supply right here given to me by the guy who also happened to bring Panera's earlier to the clinic. Like, it's okay. Just that simple. It's too easy for us to just give you birth control when instead we could actually spend our time teaching women, young women especially, about their bodies if they want to learn. And I think a lot of young women nowadays.
Yeah. And even the way it's taught makes it almost taboo, I feel like. Yeah. Sex, it almost makes it weird, or it just shouldn't be that way. Like you said, it's a beautiful thing. It creates miracles. It's a life source. And we failed in a lot of ways, I feel like, with our teaching for kids. But hopefully now, like we've said before on another podcast episode, that it's coming more to light, and the girls and the boys below our generation are truly lucky, because more and more is coming to light and more research is being done about cycles and all of that. So I think that's really great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it starts, I mean, I have a lot of teenagers coming to my office and their mom is bringing them, because when their mom had painful periods or their mom wanted to not get pregnant, what did their moms do? They took them to get on birth control, right? Like it's so when you have these conversations with the young adults and their moms are there and you're explaining what birth control does, they're like, whoa, like no one's ever explained that to me. So it's cool to see some breaking some of that generation, like the generational things that we were taught. If you're a provider listening to this, like it all starts with you. Like you have to have those conversations with your patients and be willing to take the time to sit down and talk to them about, you know, what your lifestyle look like. And I know that is hard sometimes in conventional medicine, because you're given 10 minutes to see a patient.
Yeah. You know how it is. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't even blame the OBGYNs for all of the problems. I also think we have a medical system that thrives based on consumer demand.
Yeah.
If you expect a quick fix, if you want to just do blood work and replete whatever's missing, okay, but we're not getting at the reason why you're so depleted in magnesium, or you're so achy all the time, or you don't have any energy, or you can't lose weight. Ozempic, there you go. You're done. Yeah. Easy breezy, you know? It's just, frankly, it's become too easy for us to be giving out pills, and it's become too much of a demand from our consumers. What are we to do? I mean, like, I don't even know a single OBGYN. I'm sure I could find one, but I don't know any that I've met along the way that would even know what a Dutch test was. And that's like, fine. You don't believe in it. You don't think pee is good. Fine, whatever. But can you tell me the connection between the adrenals and the gonads? Can you just run me through it? Remind me what you know about that. Cause I didn't learn shit. Like I remember hearing about it, but I didn't really put it into practice. It was just like, oh yeah, of course something goes off in the feedback loops or whatever. But anyways, tell me about, you know, would you want this birth control or this birth control? Like, why don't we actually start talking about like how your liver metabolizes things? I didn't know that until I went to fellowship for end of life care and I had to learn about opioids and benzos and how they were metabolized in liver failure, for example. This is a giant void in women's health, is just appreciating that you are more than the sum of your parts. Mm-hmm. And just looking at your uterus or your ovaries or your adrenals or your liver or, you know, your bladder, like it doesn't make any sense out of context. We need it to be a bigger story. And like you said, Lindsay, unfortunately, our medical system is not nurturing young doctors or nurse practitioners or any medical professionals for that matter to really invest the time through the lens of curiosity to just be like in wonderment of like, why is this person's period so off? They're thin. They have a nice set of hair. They have nice skin. Why on earth is their period off? Like we could do so much good if we would just be curious again. Likewise with home birth. But people aren't incentivized to be curious, and they've got $500,000 in debt and their life sucks. Like they're miserable. They're not having sex themselves. So why would they talk to you about having sex? Like, Sorry, OBGYNs. I feel for you.
It's not their fault. Like it's not. And you're exactly right. Like I still work 3 days a week in a hospital setting, and it's not the hospital's fault either. Like they have to pay their bills and all of that. It's just the way that healthcare is set up. And you're right. And part of it is, you guys are listening, part of it's your guys' fault. Like probably you're not fault, but if you're constantly wanting these quick fixes and you're driving medicine to be this way. And we have this conversation with everyone a lot. Like we have a lot of people coming to me, us complaining about like their thyroid being off and their hormones being off. And, you know, and I'm like, well, why is that off? Because you can fix it with hormone replacement and supplementation and all that type of stuff. But Are you stressed out? Are you sleeping? Are you eating processed foods? Like, those are all the reasons why you're having all these issues. So if you don't fix those and you just want a quick pill, then you're not helping any of this that we're talking about at all. But they can go get a Zempic off the street and lose 20 pounds in a month, and that seems easier for them.
From like some guy in the you know, kids section at Target selling Ozempic or something. Yeah, it's it's like wacky.
Well, it's, you know, the other thing is too. You can go buy hormones at your
You can get your talks and your hormones.
Yeah, exactly. You know, frankly, I actually feel like a lot of people who speak this way, they're friends of mine. They're people like me who I was like pushing a lot of supplementation and everything, and I realized this isn't helping anybody. And, you know, I think that there's a role for supplements and for biohacking and all of this. But frankly, I think that we've actually, as consumers, fallen into the same exact current that we were miffed with in the medical system, which was find the diagnosis and give the cure. Find the diagnosis, give the cure. And while that's good for fine-tuning our health, when people like us are in really good shape, and you're like, man, how could I get a little bit more oomph out of the engine? Or how could I get that little bit of extra fat off? Because I'm already sleeping 9 hours a day or whatever. I think those are good tools. But they're just tools. They don't replace what could be our foundational rung of women's health, which is eat nutritional food, especially organ meats and oysters and bone broth and eggs and fermented cod liver oil, assuming people aren't vegan, in which case I have no idea what to tell you. And then sleeping 8 to 9 hours. Sorry, the vegans. If you're going to eat a healthy diet, you have to be so gifted in biochemistry and organic chemistry, I have no idea where to start with vegans, but I digress.
I talk about eating meat with my hands, so I don't know either. Don't ask me.
I have a carcass of a chicken in there, and I just keep going in and ripping pieces off and shoving it. Yeah.
I mean, why not?
Yeah. So, you know, without these foundational things, I mean, we could riff on that, but you got, your audience knows that. Like, if you're, I even tell people, I've gotten so many requests for people to work with me that I say, you have to eat organ meats over the next month. 4 out of the 7 days, you need to sleep 9 hours a night. And 4 out of the 7 days, you have to either eat organ meats or smoked oysters. When you've done that, I want you to come back to me and tell me how your symptoms are. I usually push it to 6 weeks if I can. But usually, just with more nutritious foods, don't even take anything out. Just add some extra nutrition in and sleep adequately. 4 out of 7 days for 4 to 6 straight weeks. And then let me know if you still want to do the consult. And I have yet to have somebody call me on that, which says a lot.
Yeah.
No lab work. Yeah. Nothing.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it that's the same for men too. Like, we were talking about you need to get pregnant with men, but like, we have, so we own a CrossFit gym as well. And so we had a member that was like, I'm just not feeling good. I think my testosterone's low. So I ran a bunch of lab work on him, and his testosterone is really low. Like, he probably doesn't feel good, but his insulin is also 148, and he's drinking and not sleeping, and his triglyceride HDL ratio is like 8. So like, I'm not even like, testosterone replacement is the last thing that you need right now. You need to focus on some lifestyle changes and your testosterone will go up. But I mean, men are the same. They're the same. They're like, how many men do you know out there that are on testosterone replacement? And it's like, if you just fix your lifestyle.
I
mean,
I live in a jiu-jitsu gym. Okay. Yeah, like these jiu-jitsu kids, they're like 24, they're like built like linebackers, and I'm 39 and I'm going to go and wrestle with them for an hour, and they're on TRT, and I'm like, you're like a fucking cyborg. There's no way I'm going to be able to compete with that. What on earth are you doing on TRT? Well, my libido was low, and I'm like when I was 22, my libido, I was like, I would fuck a toaster. Like, I was so excited to have sex every time. And I feel like if the menstrual cycle, I'm sorry if you're listening.
No, you are so funny.
This is great.
If you're 22 and you don't have a good libido, you have got to stop doing something, or like, you got to go see Lindsay or Shauna. Like, go and get some coaching, because I'm probably not going to be your best friend. And if the menstrual cycle, these regular predictable bleeds are the vital sign for women, the equivalent is waking up with a massive erection and wanting to go to town with your hot wife. If those two things aren't there, you have got to reevaluate some things. And I don't mean that as like a, like, bro, like, I'm not puffing my chest. I am saying you have to consider that there might actually be some long-term consequences, and that we can't simply replace your testosterone with some androgel or whatever, and then also expect you're going to have a totally normal, you know, healthy pregnancy and all this other stuff. You're creating quite a bit of harm in the future if you aren't willing to address the fact that you aren't waking up with a morning erection. Like, it's just, you're not healthy. And I want to be able to help you, but if you're not doing the 8 to 9 hours of sleep and you're not eating some healthy foods, like, we're not going to do replacement. We're not doing any of that. I want you to really reevaluate this, and just imagine, what would your life be like if you felt vital again? I mean, what do you have to lose to get your vitality back? Like, you're going to have such a better life if you can just prioritize some of these things and get off of Instagram and forget about this phony baloney stuff that you're, you know, supposed to lift 500 pounds. If you're not sleeping and you're doing whatever, I don't care how much you lift, because you're doing it artificially. Your body is going to respond in kind. Sorry, soapbox over. I get passionate about this one about men, because all of my buddies now want to do TRT because it's safe, and it, you know, and it's like, it's safe, but is it the best thing?
It's the same thing with women.
Is it
too
safe? I don't know.
Like, it's the same thing with women too, though. We see it all the time. They want hormone replacement and all this other stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but like, and then they don't feel better and they're mad because they don't feel better and they're spending money on hormone replacement. I'm like, yeah, but you're still not sleeping and you're still not eating foods and you're still not moving your body. Like, your insulin level is still out the wazoo. So no, you're not going to lose weight and feel better, but that takes work and effort. And it's just like you said, it's a privilege to have a baby. It's a privilege to feel good too. And you have to put in some work to do that. It's not like you're not just given this healthy, you are given a healthy body, but you have to do some work to keep it that way. You can't eat the standard American diet and sit on your phone all day long.
Yeah. It's hard earned. It's not a guarantee, but you certainly are going to be dead in your tracks if you don't start with these foundational principles. You know, I think another one is like drinking clean living water. Like, not just bottled shit that's been sitting in your car in the sun for 6 months. Like be very, like, maybe the word, Lindsay, is like, maybe just bring a little bit of attention and intention into everything that you're doing. It makes such a difference. Even like when you're taking a poop, just sit there and take a poop.
Yeah. I'm don't be scrolling on Instagram.
Like doom scrolling while you're like, your legs are going numb. Like, maybe just sit there and have a poop and like, be thoughtful for 5 minutes. It doesn't need to be a half hour. My wife has told me 5 minutes, and then you wipe and you go about your day. Like, maybe just start there, or start with reading a little bit at night instead of watching a movie. Like, there are little things that actually require quite a bit of presence, but they can make a huge world of difference. And when you're going to have that baby, those little kids, they need you, dad. You can't be dying of heart attacks at 55 at work on a business trip when you're, you know, smoking cigars and drinking whiskey. Like, they need you to be alive. Your little girls, especially, they crave your love and your attention. If you can't move, if you can't run, you can't play with them, I'm sorry. There's no fix for that. There's no silver bullet for that. So you either do it now or you pay for it later.
Yeah. And life is short. You're not guaranteed tomorrow. And yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this was such an awesome conversation. Thank you so much for having it with us. So where can people find you at? Just, I know, like, you post a lot of great content on social media. So just to get some more education from you.
Yeah. I just tell people go to Instagram. You know, Nathan Riley OBGYN is my handle there. And, you know, you'll find everything there, from my podcast to my pregnancy and postpartum support program, which includes a lot of everything we've just talked about, which, cause it starts way before you get pregnant. Mm-hmm. Like, all of the stuff we've said is relevant to pregnancy, because as we've already mentioned, if you go the route of getting some assistance, fine, that's okay for some people, but you have to realize that if it gets to that point, you are predisposing yourself to pregnancy complications, and nobody wants those. So, Nathan Riley, OBGYN on Instagram. Reach out to me, guys. I answer all of my own DMs. You can slide into my DMs and I'll answer it.
Slide right in.
Slide right in. Just don't send me vulva photos. I'm tired of vulva photos. I don't need to see your ulcers or your bumps. I would like you to go and see the doctor because I have no idea what that is. I don't know what that bump is.
You're laughing, Shauna, but it's legit. Like I get people's like blood clots sent to me in Facebook Messenger and then discharge. I'm like, what?
It's just it's a lot. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
Yeah. Well, it makes me wonder, like, how old is this person who's sending this photo to me? Like, is this incriminating? Like, what is going on? Why would you send a stranger a picture of your vulva? Anyways,
yeah.
Just reach out and like, I can be your doctor, but let's do it the right way. Find my website, book a consult. I'm happy to help you. I just don't want to open my DMs in front of my wife and it's like, oh my gosh, what is that?
I'm not meeting you in the toy section at Target. So just like, be professional. Thank you so much. This was great. And like always, ladies, we will catch you next week. See ya.